Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few taps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects, and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
Ophthalmologist Dr. Strauss has seen firsthand how the metaverse is helping surgeons practice the procedures to treat cataracts.
Cataracts are the primary cause of avoidable blindness.
He works with a virtual reality training platform developed by Fundamental VR and Orbis International to help surgeons develop the muscle memory they need. The result? More confident, capable surgeons. And even more importantly,
patients who can see.
Explore more stories like Dr. Strauss's at meta.com/metaverseimpact.
We're coming, and we ain't backing down.
We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Yeah, looking in the mirror.
I'm bitterly disappointed with the officiating today.
Guys being dudes.
And they run through our like through a tin horn, man.
Thank you, Lee. Alex, it will not surprise you that central Pennsylvania, your native land, not so conducive to cell phone service on a Sunday morning when, you know, a certain thing happens in the college football world.
Taking issue with you calling central Pennsylvania my homeland.
Yeah, but it's true because somebody told me earlier this week that Pennsylvania is basically Philadelphia and Pittsburgh with Mississippi and Alabama in the middle, and they are not wrong.
No, they are not wrong. I like to say that I'm from Pittsburgh, but I've never really lived in Pennsylvania. So you have a much better understanding of that than I do right now. But yes, I'm Alex Kirshen. That's Richard Johnson. Big news while Richard was on bad cell service and while I was sleeping.
Asleep.
Because I live on the West Coast now, and we were going to record this Sunday hurry up later in the day because of Richard's aforementioned travels. Now we're changing plans around. We're here now. We're doing this a little earlier than we thought because later today, that's Sunday, we will be recording a special emergency episode on the situation at Texas A&M. You can get that on our Substack at splitzoneduo.com. If you are a Patreon subscriber, just sign up with the same email, enter your payment information. You won't be billed until December. You don't even have to do that right now because you are automatically comped through the month if you were already a subscriber on Patreon, but you should do it promptly. And if you were not a subscriber before, no time like the present. We will tell you about the situation at A&M, but there will also just be so much more throughout this month of November and every other month after that. It's a great deal. $10 a month, you can get a month free if you sign up for an annual subscription. And also, while we're doing pod business, Richard, before we get into it, I want to tell you that you should go to homefieldapparel.com and use the promo code SCD20 to get 20% off your first order. Very excited for our friends at Home Field Apparel for all of the great shirt business that they are going to do over this incredibly exciting time of the year in college sports, not just the stretch run of the football season, but also the start of the basketball season. Love you, Home Field. SCD20 at homefieldapparel.com. Richard, 30 minutes on the clock. Shall we hurry up through this weekend in college football?
Yeah, I think we will, because over on Substack, we were doing a live chat yesterday during a certain football game you may be aware of. I'm going to talk about it in 3, 2, 1, Michigan 24, Penn State 15. A lot going on here. We're not even, honestly, going to really touch on the Harbaugh of it all. Let's start with Penn State. Some boo birds in the stands, my good friend, from someone who was boots on the ground. I can tell you that for sure. And it wasn't just at the end, even though some projectiles came from the stands at the end with whatever that Emory and Henry swinging gate 2-point conversion Penn State ran near the end of the game there. Penn State, it's so bad in person, that offense. It's shocking, man. It's shocking for it to be that bad. And it was bad against Ohio State. I get it. It's not like I didn't know they couldn't really play, but that was rough yesterday. Right after Michigan on the defensive front figured out, hey, they're going to do some gap scheme runs. Let's shut that off and let's play ball here.
I think Penn State was bit by one thing that we wondered about going into the season, which is that the wide receiver play just never has developed. I thought it was kind of bizarre on the Fox broadcast that you couldn't hear. Gus Johnson kept being like, Dante Cephas, he's a real threat in the red zone. And I think what happened there is that they watched the Maryland game against Maryland and were like, yeah, Penn State's offense is great. Like, these guys are all threats. Penn State's receivers did not come through. They haven't come through all year except for a couple of moments, including a lot of them against Maryland last week. I think Drew Aller appears to have been a bit of a misseval or a development problem.
This is the other thing. I don't want to let him off scot-free either, Alex. Just from a quarterback evaluation standpoint. Like, I'm watching these balls, and it's I am shocked he did not throw a pick six yesterday. Because you know how a lot of pick sixes happen when you throw a ball in the flat, and it misses in the flat, and there's a corner sitting there pouncing, and he goes. Mm-hmm. A lot of behind, a lot of too high. You know, obviously, I didn't throw the ball 25 times yesterday. But I was waiting on a pick six to happen in that game for a lot of it.
This is the thing that he has done well slash fortunately is avoid interceptions. But whether it was eval or development, he is not the guy that Penn State needed, hoped he would be. Maybe that will change. Maybe he will have a Graham Mertz type career arc and it will just go that way. I don't know, but he's not the guy. And the last guy Richard did not let off scot-free here is obviously the guy in charge. James Franklin is 4-16 against Ohio State and Michigan. Three of those wins came against Michigans that were not special, including the really bad Michigan of the COVID year, years that Michigan wasn't good. The other one is the 2016 Ohio State game on the blocked field goal return that everyone talks about. In 10 years on this job, he has won one Big Ten game that Penn State would see as a measuring stick against the good versions of the teams that they want to be, that James Franklin has argued they need more resources to be. There's no way to slice that other than as not good enough. And I'm not at all advocating for a firing. They gave him a contract that makes that, I guess I shouldn't say moot because of the Jimbo Fisher news, but pretty moot.
I get what you're saying.
They need better. Like, this is a guy who makes $10 million a year and he just doesn't deliver. This year is a failure. Penn State is what it is. And that's not in the weight class with the big two. It's the only way to look at it. And this guy gets paid like they should be in that weight class, and he has not done the job.
Look, I think they're not in the weight class because they lose, but like 10 wins a year, Penn State people know what I'm going to say. I know you're going to be frustrated when I say it. 10 wins a year, a lot of programs would love it, even Penn State 10, 15 years ago. You know what I mean. But it is tough. It's tough when you come out here and you lay an egg like you did yesterday with a defense that, in my opinion, is still as good enough. Right. And we'll get to it in a second, but like, it's good enough there. I didn't love a couple of James Franklin's in-game decision-making. I don't know why they didn't go for it in the first quarter when they got down there near the goal line and they kicked the short field goal there. I was like, dude, go for it, man. If you don't get it, Michigan is backed up in front of your student section. Go for it, man. And then they had another one later in the quarter or later in the first half, I believe, that they didn't go for it. But and then that throws you into sort of a high leverage situation with that drive at the end of the first half, right? Where they went for it twice and then even went for two as well. It was like high leverage after high leverage after high leverage on that drive. So game management, which I know a lot of people ding James for, in-game management was a little, in my opinion, as well.
Would agree. I didn't have a huge issue with the two-point conversion stuff personally that a lot of talk was being made about at the end of the game, but they weren't good enough. Michigan was good enough. They had a plan in this game. One of the things that you observed, Richard, during the game, you were talking about in our Substack chat, was that Penn State seemed to be trying to tee off on the downhill Michigan run game. So Michigan made it an east-west run game, and Penn State had a really hard time adjusting to that, and that shows up in Blake Corum's numbers.
Not even an east-west run game. A thick run game too. Like, you watch the first part of that game, Michigan coming out in trips, right? Coming out in shotgun, coming out in, and Penn State answered that by going into too high and a too high shell. And they were, I thought at first Penn State was kind of daring JJ McCarthy to be a real boy. Like, all right, you're gonna have to make some throws here in this game.
He did not really.
And here's the thing. Because Michigan comes after the first couple drives there where I thought Chop Robinson was going to make millions of dollars. Like, midway through the second quarter, I was like, all right, Chop Robinson, you know, Thursday night draft pick here because of what we're seeing here. Michigan's right tackle was having a very bad time. And then Michigan comes out and says, all right, you want to go light in the ass? Watch this. And they come out in like 16 personnel the whole rest of the game. They run the ball 30 times in a row, plus two kneel downs. Yes, there were a couple call passes that were JJ McCarthy scrambles. You know what I mean? They ran the hell out of the ball. They Harbaughed it and got out of there. And that is an in-game adjustment to get to Harbaugh ball when he was not in the building that I think honestly is really funny and slightly ironic.
The stuff after the game, everyone kind of laughed. A lot of people laughing about it. Sherrone Moore, very emotional. Like, I love the shit out of you, man, to Jim Harbaugh. He's crying. I think it's sweet how much Jim Harbaugh has inspired that love from his coaching staff. I honestly think it's sweet. It's indicative that he's probably been very good to him. It is also fine to point out that for the second time this year, Michigan players and coaches have acted like he has been dead, like he has passed from the earth. He was in the hotel.
This is a slightly different circumstance, though, in my opinion, than okay. the first three. Like, this is where, okay, I can see how Michigan people can actively say this is real adversity imposed on us. And yes, Connor Stallions was one of your own. The call was coming from inside the house. I get that. But this is different than like a self-imposed. Like, the Big Ten did something to you 24 hours before the game, yeah. Which we'll get to that on the Wednesday show. I get it. But it's funny because you talk about the Sherrone Moore emotion. You can't really see it, but I am standing like 10 feet away behind Jenny Taft. And I have my phone up and I was recording it, just, you know, you're recording on-field scene. And I see him start to like weep, but I can't really hear what he's saying. So like, I'm like, damn, he's like really passionate. And I've, you know, you figure he's probably talking something about Harbaugh. And then after the game, my editor, SI, like sent me the full video. He was like, you got to see this. And yeah, the emotion, you know, his eyes were still wet, in the post-game press conference. I guess they FaceTimed with Harbaugh, in the locker room. Somebody put their phone up, and then they got back to Ann Arbor and they went to a hockey game and they were like, free Jim Harbaugh chants at the hockey game.
I first of all, the thought of one person on FaceTime talking to like 150 people in that locker room, like is almost giving me hives. So maybe we should move out of here with that game. But also Sherrone Moore should have shouted out Connor Stallions. Like, the guy who gets caught behind enemy lines, instead of giving you up, he says he's not going to cooperate and he swallows a cyanide tablet. I mean, like, I don't know. That's your war hero that you guys should be like, that's the guy you should be cheering for, Michigan. Illinois 48, Indiana 45 in overtime. Just noting here that Indiana's offense is actually getting better since they fired Walt Bell about a month ago, Rod Carey and Justin Fuente in the house. This is actually a pretty exciting game. It was probably the next most interesting thing to watch during the noon Eastern time window on Saturday. So good stuff. Indiana loses, and I still think they're never going to get it back under Tom Allen, but better than nothing to see some proof of progress.
Illinois threw for like 500 yards in this game? Where the hell did that come from?
I don't know. That's an interesting deal. Speaking of where the hell that come from, Northwestern 24, Wisconsin 10. Wisconsin is way worse than we are used to seeing. And the Phil Longo thing is not capital N, not working out like at all. I thought long-term. It would be kind of, it is long-term. I thought long-term. It would be a little better this year. And the Braylon Allen injury is what it is. Thought it would be a little better this year. Northwestern, David Braun has won 5 games this year. Apparently the first coach in the history of the program to win 5 in his first year on the job.
That would be, what, 4.5 games more than you thought they were going to win this season?
Yeah. I mean, this is, relative to what I thought, this is one of the best seasons that any team has had.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. Maryland 13, Nebraska 10. Alex, what the hell happened here?
Well, what happened here is that Maryland gets the bowl eligibility thing. Nebraska is going to have to beat either Wisconsin or Iowa to do that, and Wisconsin looks very beatable. But Nebraska had 3 different quarterbacks throw picks in this game. Heinrich Harburg started. Jeff Sims then threw a couple and lost a fumble. Chuba Purdy came into the game, threw a brutal Ooh. Pick. The teams on back-to-back series traded turnovers like inside the other's 5-10-yard line. It was tough to watch, man. It was tough to watch, but Maryland gets a win and stops a 4-game losing streak. In the Pac-12, Washington 35, Utah 28. The sequence in this game, Richard, that I texted you about probably while you were like on the road or reporting was really one of the funnier things and like more maddening things that you will ever see in college football. You know what I'm talking about. Alfonso Tupatala for Washington intercepts the ball about 78 yards short of the goal line for Utah. He runs it about 76 yards, very clearly short of the goal line by like a full 2 yards. It's the most ridiculous DeSean Jacksoning that you will ever see in football. Like, he was not close to the goal line.
Not close. No, and he like just, not close.
Like, not even remotely near it. And he just placed the ball on the ground. Most of the players on the field did not seem to realize it. There was one Washington receiver or DB down there who I think did. And a big boy for Utah, Michael Mokafisi, recognized it, ran on it, fell on it at about the one or the two. Unfortunately, the next play, they handed it to Jaquindon, and he is just like it's the safety of safety ever. Like, he gets the ball, and there's just nowhere for him to go. It was maddening to watch on the part of both teams. Like, you got to just QB sneak that out of there if you're Utah, if that's even a possibility that could happen. I think Washington is a rich man's USC, and they're 10-0, so you have to take them seriously, because it does not take that much more for them to be in the playoff. But they're just USC, but a little better at everything.
Washington and Oregon 36, USC 27 have diverged diverged in a woods or whatever the fucking poem is. Like, Oregon has gotten on a different trajectory than Washington. I think it's very fair to say. Washington's got to get through both of these teams have to get through Oregon State for us to be playoff serious about them in a couple weeks in the Pac-12 championship game. But Oregon, this was take care of business. Obviously, USC, that defense, it had more to do than just Alex Grinch, but they got Alex Grinch out. We understand how that goes. Oregon did pretty much what you want with USC's defense, given the circumstances. But, you know, number 13's on the other side, so USC was always going to do a little something. They just didn't do enough of a little something.
A lot of reporting and a lot of the images on the broadcast of this game suggesting that the USC sideline was looking pretty despondent, which makes sense. And they've lost four games. It's the way it's gone. Arizona 34, Colorado 31. Mentioned it in the midweek that Jonah Coleman and the fellas might run for some yardage here. How's 11 carries for 179 yards for him?
The Colorado thing is now very – it's going to be an interesting – retrospect when we get to Thanksgiving weekend and we look back on the whole thing, because at the end of September, probably directly pre Travis Hunter injury, like, when you looked at it, you were like, all right, 7, likely maybe 8. And I think I even said on one of our shows, they're not going to lose 9 games in a row. Well, it's not 9 in a row.
It's starting to look like it's not going to be – it's very much looking like it's not going to be a bowl eligibility year for Colorado. Still a lot of progress, but, yeah, you're seeing some hard realities here. Arizona State 17, UCLA 17 at the Rose Bowl. Arizona State ran the swinging gate with their quarterback injured. The quarterback, Trenton Borgett, he did play in this game anyway, but they ran a bunch of trick plays, most of which didn't even work. They had a tight end who was 2-for-2 passing for 2 yards. Apparently they Googled – Kenny Dillingham said they Googled the swinging gate and put it in on, like, Tuesday. And yet they win, because UCLA's offense is a disaster site. I'm not sure about that whole deal right now. It's not been really an optimism-inspiring few weeks for Chip Kelly and that whole thing.
Chip's fine. Big 12, Texas 29, TCU 26. All right, look, Texas, you just got to get this thing into the house, all right? You're on hole 14. You missed a couple birdie putts, but you haven't three-jacked it yet. Yet.
This game was the same in very serious ways as last week. Texas comes out, dominates the purple team. They stop playing for a while in the second half. Purple team gets very, very close to coming back and knocking Texas out of the college football playoff race. But then Texas reveals itself to just have better players than the purple team. Last week, it was Byron Murphy on the defensive line, just ragdolling people as Kansas State tried to come down and win that game, tie that game against Texas very late. And this week, it was Quinn Ewers being back and throwing up a prayer to A.D. Mitchell, who made a catch that most teams don't have receivers who can make that catch. You know, TCU had one last year with Quentin Johnson, but there are not that many receivers in college football who catch that ball the way that Adonai Mitchell did to seal this game for Texas. They just have the dudes, and the dudes count for a lot. UCF 45, Oklahoma State 3. Whew.
I called friend of the show, Bud Elliott, on, I guess, Thursday. And I was like, but because he's been barking up this tree about UCF. He was talking about UCF favored in this game if he was setting the line. And I called him. I was like, Bud, what are you looking at in this game? And hey, Bud's a smart guy.
Bud knows ball. Yeah, Bud knows ball.
Whew.
The most shocking games of this season, like, if I'm thinking off the top of my head, 2 of 3 of those have been Oklahoma State losses. Their blowout to South Alabama was a real, like, what the hell is happening here thing early in the season. And this as well, a pretty shocking thing. Got to give flowers to UCF, which just, like, beat that ass in this game completely. Like, this was the most impressive thing by far that a Big 12 newcomer has done this year.
Yes.
Like, yeah. like by far, not even close. But yeah, it's shocking. And Oklahoma State, though, does, because of the way that the tiebreakers work out, they remain in pretty decent shape here to be in the Big 12 title game. Other teams involved in that race, Texas Tech 16, Kansas 13. That's a blow for Kansas there. Kansas was on quarterback 3 for some of this game.
Yeah, something like that. Bean got hurt, and there's another backup in, and it went the way you think that went.
Oklahoma 59, West Virginia 20. Oklahoma's going to do that sometimes. As we've talked about, Dylan Gabriel had the other side of the Dylan Gabriel coin. You saw one side in Stillwater. You saw another side here. He had like a billion touchdowns. Iowa State 45, BYU 13. Iowa State is in it here, in it as they go to see Texas, as they play Texas next week, and have to be taken seriously in the Big 12 title race. Quite a turnaround for them, given where they were at the beginning of the season. Not really involved in the title race is Baylor, but Kansas State still kind of around here, 59-25. Like, I don't know, Richard. I mean, we knew this would happen, but it's getting so bad for Kansas, or excuse me, for Baylor that I don't know. Like, does this change the way you think about Dave Aranda at all?
Not really. I mean, they're going to have to make offensive staff changes. The AD, like, not just signaled it, set it on the record 5 weeks ago. Like,
basically
not
said it.
No. Not basically said it. Set it on the record like 5 weeks ago. I mean, it's happening. We knew what was going to happen here.
In Tallahassee, Florida State 27, Miami 20.
Miami. I'm not going to say Miami played it like it's super. Look, Miami, obviously, you know, we talked about it in the midweek. Quarterback situation a little wonky. They don't play Tyler Van Dyke. Emery Williams plays. Then on the last, basically Miami's last gasp, gets like seriously hurt. Like multiple people on the injury cart hurt. Yeah. Long game stoppage hurt. And you know, I didn't really think Florida State was going to lose this game watching it. But it's one of those things where you're like, all right, Florida State is very good. Very competent. It's probably going to go undefeated and win this league. But they do not, in my opinion, have not shown enough of a killer instinct in spots like this, which I think is something that we'll get to in January. But for now, you play a Miami team that Miami makes it their Super Bowl, will always play you hard. Weird safety deal, I think, at the end of the first half. Sean McDonough on the broadcast, like, aired out the replay booth and was like, we asked the replay booth for something at halftime. They said they were going to get back with us. They didn't get back with us. We asked them for some, I guess there was a targeting as well that was a little dicey. And McDonough said, you know, we asked them about the targeting and they didn't get back to us. It's very funny. McDonough is like, I think McDonough is one of the best.
He's one of the best. He deserves big assignments. He's an excellent play-by-play man. On the Miami front, I guess this is an occasion to just point out that their lack of an answer at quarterback and the development catastrophe of Van Dyke's career there is not confidence inspiring about them. It's just not. And I don't know, like, he might have just been a total fluke there in 2021. Like, but he only played a few downs in this game. And as I think the broadcast rightly pointed out, on the fourth down, the end of the game, like, he had Xavier Restrepo on an outbreaking route and had him and didn't throw the ball until he didn't have him. And like, what are you doing when you're with Shannon Dawson in the film room? What is being accomplished when you are talking to your quarterbacks if you're Miami? It's just not really connecting for me, and I think that is a cause for concern. North Carolina 47, Duke 45, probably the game of the week here. Did you catch any of this?
I saw the very tail end, and I just saw what – because UNC went up like 12, and I was like, all right, we're going to be fine here. And then I saw some tweets that were like, overtime, and I was like, what the hell happened here?
So there was a lot happening here, a lot of officiating stuff that I think rightly is going to get talked about, but the quarterbacks were both awesome. Grayson Loftus, who is Riley Leonard's backup, went shot for shot with Drake May. You know, they really played really well, especially at the end of this game. There was an insane zero blitz call by Gene Chizik with the game basically hanging in the balance on, I believe, a fourth down. It might have been a third, but it was a money down for the Duke offense. Chizik sends the entire house, everyone in single coverage. Yeah. Throw it up, touchdown. Duke goes ahead in the final minute of this game. May does a May thing, brings him down the field. Noah Burnett on senior day, kicker there, drills one, sends it to overtime. The officiating thing is that there was what looked a lot like a Duke interception of a throw to on the Carolina side down near the goal line that was not given as an interception, and for whatever reason, the game wasn't even stopped to look at it on the ACC's part. Nobody seemed to understand that, and it is really curious that it did not get an apparently longer look. Duke was also mad. Duke fans were mad because they wanted, on what turned out to be the decisive two-point conversion for UNC in the second overtime, they wanted an ineligible man downfield call on a lineman. He was 3.5 yards downfield. The rule is 3. I understand why you want it, but given the way that rule is officiated, come on now. You know, like we're letting people get away with murder on that foul, and you're trying to throw a guy in jail for life for stealing a candy bar. I mean, it's ridiculous. In my opinion, you don't call that. Elsewhere in this conference, quickly, Clemson 42, Georgia Tech 21. It was ugly for a while, but Clemson gets done. Congrats on bowl eligibility. Virginia Tech sends Boston College back to the dark ages, 48-22. Kyron Jones, very, very good. And on a week that game, Louisville 31, UVA 24. Louisville comes back late here, and I swear to God, has higher than a 0% playoff chance as we get halfway through November. That's big. Hate this for UVA, which played really hard, had running back Paris Jones injured very seriously. Enough so that he required spinal surgery. We are told by the school that that was successful. We wish him well. We wish UVA's whole team well. They've had, on every front imaginable, just a year from hell. And I want good moments for those players in the last couple weeks of the season.
SEC, Georgia 52, Ole Miss 17. You know, like, Ole Miss, stop me if you've heard this before, Alex. Ole Miss comes out, some tempo, a little bit of razzle-dazzle, wheel route, deep ball. Score 2 touchdowns, end of the first quarter. Maybe they're in it. Then they're not. You've seen this movie before. Georgia rolls. Brock Bowers comes back. He's got an adamantium high ankle. They did the tightrope surgery, and it worked because I think that's kind of a thing that you can now do. And Carson Beck is an additive to winning, man. I'm not relitigating the Stetson Bennett thing. That is not what I am doing. I am saying he is a different quarterback than Stetson Bennett, who was in the house, by the way, last night. Different quarterback than Stetson Bennett, and he is an additive to winning by what he can do, and an additive to their offense by what he can do.
One thing you have to give Ole Miss, which just wasn't ready for primetime in the same way it's never ready for primetime, was that the fake punt call in the second half before this got totally out of hand was pretty sweet. Like, good film room work by Ole Miss. They just had this punter walk to a first down while nobody on the Georgia sideline was apparently paying attention to this possibility. And I bet Kirby is extremely grateful for that, because the chances that that happens now the rest of the season are effectively zero.
Mizzou 36, Tennessee 7. The last two games have the close loss to Georgia, close than the experts thought, and then this absolute shellacking of Tennessee. I mean, Mizzou is good. Mizzou is good.
Yeah.
Mizzou is capital G good. G, I wonder who they play next week.
Alabama, I'm feeling 48. Pretty good. Hold up. I just want to say I'm feeling pretty good about my Mizzou is better than Tennessee and Ole Miss thought from the show a couple weeks ago. Feeling pretty good about it. Some things age better than others. This one's aging well.
Alabama 49, Kentucky 21. We told you.
You did save me from one there. Yeah, you did. Yes, you did save me from one there.
We had to pull you out of the fire there. 60 minutes away from a playoff berth, defense good. Auburn 48, Arkansas 10. I really don't know what happened here with Arkansas, because I saw this Arkansas team in person last week. Coming off of a bye, new offensive coordinator said, all right, Frisky, maybe they've turned a little corner there on offense, doing enough to be competitive in this game. I actually took them against the spread. They were favored against the spread. And then they did this against Auburn.
One of the interesting little CFB, inside baseball politics, things that I thought about during this game is that Auburn, there are elements of the Auburn fan base, factions of the Auburn fan base that have, I think, eyed up Arkansas's current defensive coordinator, Travis Williams, to be maybe a one-day Auburn head coach. Auburn player, Auburn coach, very highly regarded in the industry. Probably giving up 48 to this Auburn offense will not ultimately help that case, but you'll never know. It'll be years down the line. This has actually been a few encouraging Auburn offense. I mean, they covered the total by themselves in this game. There have been a few times recently where despite what appears to be a pretty lacking personnel group, that offense has scored a lot of points, and things have gotten better there in the latter part of the year. We must begrudgingly admit it for Mr. Hugh Freeze.
I don't begrudgingly say that Hugh Freeze is a good offensive football coach. The guy can coach offense.
He can coach offense. Yeah, I agree. He can coach offense. LSU 52, Florida 35. Richard, what's it like to be invested in a game where Jaden Daniels is doing that to you?
Yeah, that is tough. I could tell you that. That is a toughie. I was during the 85-yard touchdown run in the first half, when he was like getting it going, I was driving. So I'm driving, listening to friend of the show, Cole Kublik, explain in, who was one of the best, but explain in visceral detail how LSU is doing this and how Jaden Daniels is doing this. Tough. Jaden Daniels goes for 300 and 200. Jaden Daniels.
Almost 400 and 250.
Yeah.
It's a better way to put it.
I think Jaden Daniels, I saw, is like the first college football player ever who has gone for 12,000 passing yards and I think 3,000 rushing yards. If I have that right, I have to go look at that. Box office player. And if LSU had a defense with the shit, he'd be a Heisman coordinator or a Heisman coordinator, Heisman candidate.
Probably should win the Heisman anyway, if we're being honest about what that award is supposed to be. It's not going to happen because of the way their season has gone, but hasn't been a better quarterback in college football this year. No shot.
Texas A&M 51, Mississippi State 10. SplitsOnDuel.com.
We're going to talk about this one later, but hey, I mean, that is ruthless to do it after you put 51 on a team with your third string quarterback. That is ruthless. I'm not saying it's wrong. In fact, I think it might be right. But wow, it is ruthless. The American Athletic, Tulane 24, Tulsa 22. Obviously not great for Tulane. I mean, it's a win. We've talked about Tulsa. They're very bad. They messed up that hire with Kevin Wilson last year pretty badly. I will say, heard a well-placed and directly informed Tulane explanation for this when I was talking about it with someone after the game. They're being a little conservative right now, both with their calling of the game, with injured players who they're allowing to sort of get healthy, rest up for the stretch run. I take that seriously. I credit that. But we would still like to see a bit more consistent good play from this team. And I don't think that they have – it's been almost a full year. They don't have the dimension that they had with Tajay Spears last year, which of course they don't. He was a freak. They just don't have that. They could still win this league, but we're waiting to see a few things right now on Tulane.
Memphis 44, Charlotte 38. You thought you were going to get one here. I bet you thought you were going to get one here.
I sure did, Richard. I mean, look, and honestly, it's not personal at this point. It's just me, you know, not wanting to eat my crow. Ryan Silverfield continues to get away with it. He does. It is uncanny. This was almost like a carbon copy of their game at North Texas a few weeks ago. They are down 10 late in this game. They come back. They get a tying field goal in the last minute. Charlotte returns the kick to midfield. Great chance to win the game in regulation. They throw a pick. The guy who intercepts the ball gets basically to the edge of field goal range and then tries to lateral to get further downfield. That is a fumble. That is picked up by Charlotte, so possession doesn't actually change. They go to overtime, and then Memphis overpowers them in overtime. Very good for Memphis to get that win. Shout out to Hassan Wilson, a career special teams backup for Charlotte, who got a look at running back in this game and had 24 for 198 and three touchdowns. Love to see that.
Is that because Biff Poggi suspended like the whole team or something the other day?
Biff seems to be on one this year. And you just wonder about how he's doing. Is he well? Like, I don't mean it like that, but like, is he chilling? Is he?
No, he is objectively not chilling. I will say that for sure. UTSA 34, Rice 14. UTSA, they got healthy. They got Frank Wilson back. Gee, look at that.
They got Frank Harris, you mean, although Frank Wilson, yes. Also UTSA. Big difference there for UTSA fans. They will point out the difference between those two. Defense played well against a Rice team with a backup quarterback. JT Daniels is hurt and treated a bad offense badly, which is encouraging to see. SMU 45, North Texas 21. Mustangs also without a loss in the conference. Huge game at Memphis next week. There are all kinds of possibilities right now between Tulane, Memphis, UTSA, and SMU at the top of the league. That is the most wide open conference race in college football. Troy 45.
Ooh, nice. Troy 45, ULM 14. Troy is good. ULM is not. James Madison, a lot. UConn, a little. James Madison is good. UConn is not.
JMU plays App next week. And that is now a little more interesting than it appeared to be a few weeks ago, because App might be kind of revving it up 42-14 over Georgia State. I might need to reappraise my reappraisal of Georgia State. This is why in-season analysis is so hard. The season just takes you up and down. Georgia State has now at home this year, all three times at the Ted, gotten dog walked by App State, by Troy, by App State, by Troy, and by James Madison. So what we've established is that obviously Georgia State is way worse than the upper echelon teams in this league, if you can still call App State that, but certainly you can call James Madison and Troy that. Joey Aguilar for App has been their best quarterback in a minute. Very good player. I don't know what the deal will be. A few weeks ago, Sean Clark sure looked headed to Firingsville. We'll see how things unfold for App State, but that is a huge win for them. Also, one on a weeknight, Southern Miss beats Louisiana in overtime. Two rough losses in a row for Louisiana. They had lost to Arkansas State the week prior. This was at home. Not great. Not what the Cajuns are looking for. Mountain West, Richard, was wild this week.
Yeah. Okay. Hawaii, you said one game earlier was the most surprising, but Hawaii 27, Air Force 13 might be the most shocking result of the season, if we're honest.
Air Force is just turning in all kinds of shockers at the moment. I mean, but this had a kind of similar shape to their loss to Army at home the other week. In the case of the Army game, they just couldn't stop giving the ball to the other team. And in the case of this Hawaii game, they just couldn't stop giving the ball to the other team. Turns out that even when you play teams that are way worse than you, if you give them the ball 3, 4, 5, 6 times in a game, they are going to have a chance to beat you. Unfortunate lesson learned for Air Force. San Jose State 42, Fresno 18. That's a rivalry game, the battle for the Valley. And actually, San Jose State wins this game more often than you might think. They've now won 6 of the last 11. And this was a blowout and not what you expected from a Jeff Tedford team in a conference title hunt.
UNLV 34, Wyoming 14. UNLV is good. UNLV is good on offense. Wyoming has, I think, sort of lost the plot a little bit. I think they've sort of run out of the amount of good that they had, but the amount of frisky that they had, they have exhausted it. But UNLV has really found something on offense, and it's really cool to see.
UNLV is now in control of its own fate to win the Mountain West, and it is about to be more than halfway through the month of November. Pretty cool to see if you know anything at all about UNLV football futility. In Conference USA, Liberty 38, Old Dominion 10. Liberty's pretty good. Their quarterback, Caden Salter, is pretty good. They're 10-0. They're a good team. They have a lot of money. I think that because they are a very objectionable institution in pretty much every other way, they have been stuck in a conference with football teams that don't spend like them and are not in their weight class. We thought, both of us did, that it would take a year or so before they got to be the clear cream of the crop. Turns out Western Kentucky isn't good, so Liberty is the clear best team in this league. They are going to start lobbying. That's going to happen. Nobody can act more aggrieved, I am sure, than Liberty's institution and fan base. They are going to act very persecuted if they do not get ranked this week at 10-0. I think they might have a point that they should be ranked this week. I am not very interested in them for the New Year's Six bowl slot. I'm sorry. I've been very clear about how I feel about them. I won't pretend that I like Liberty or am rooting for them or that I don't not like them. The second best team in this conference is New Mexico State, which is having a great year, but it's New Mexico State. They're not, we don't need to see them in a New Year's bowl game. I do not think that they're the best group of five team. I think that is very unlikely. They are going into kind of a spin effort. Jamie Chadwell pointed out that Old Dominion has played in a bunch of one score Sun Belt games. And obviously this was a 28 point game. So yes, you have a good transitive margin of victory against Old Dominion compared to like James Madison. That is true.
Are you ready? Are you ready, by the way, for 12 team playoff undefeated Liberty? 12 team playoff.
I'm
world,
telling you, man.
Undefeated Liberty.
Yeah, and I'm trying to put it aside. I'm not going to like lie to you, our listeners, about how I feel about Liberty. Like, I don't like them. I don't think anyone should like them. I think institutionally, it's a rotten place. But they're a good football team. They're 10-0, and I think they probably should be ranked pretty soon. They're in Conference USA, and the second best team is New Mexico State. No, they're not. They should not be in a New Year's bowl game.
Sam Houston 45, Louisiana Tech 27. I've been saying it the whole year. Sam Houston is not winless bad. No one's given them the New Year's Six berth. They're not winless bad. And they now have two. Congratulations, Sam Houston State. This is your first actual FBS win, given that Kennesaw State is not currently up.
So you, our dear listeners, you're probably wondering, why is this game between two 8-loss teams making it to the hurry-up in the middle of November? That's a great question. And the real answer is because of Louisiana Tech, which may just be a complete and unmitigated disaster, one of the worst situations in college football right now. Ben Carlisle, the publisher of Bleed Tech Blue, says that he was at practice in Ruston this week, and Sonny Cumbie, the head coach, calls him up before the team, tells him to look the players in the eye and tell them what he does. And then Sonny Cumbie strips this reporter's access to practice in front of the team for not being supportive enough of Louisiana Tech Bulldog football. I want to remind you, this is Louisiana Tech Bulldog football. How many websites do you think are devoted to the full-time coverage of Louisiana Tech athletics? And then you go out and you get beaten by 15 points at home by a Sam Houston team that has never won a game as an FBS program against an FBS program.
Tough.
Not good. Not great. Not great.
Tough scene there.
Not great. The MAC was much earlier this week, but a basic summary. It's been several days since the MAC played. Toledo has already wrapped up the West at 6-0. The East has gotten intriguing. Miami in the catbird seat, but Ohio is still kicking around. Also, Bowling Green.
Hold on. So now that you've learned what the catbird seat is 4 days ago, now you've appropriated the catbird seat.
Yes. I think I knew what it was, but I thought you were using it in a weird context. So I was confused. I hadn't understood it. But the word is It is on my mind. Bowling Green also gets bowl eligible this week for the second year in a row. That's a hard job. Good for the Falcons. Well done. Richard, I'm in the catbird seat now, though, for the rest of my Sunday.
You're better than Jimbo.